Welcome again to another podcast here on Jewish Sacred Aging, and we are very delighted to welcome as our guest Rabbi Sarah Pasha Orlo, the Director of Spiritual Care at the Hebrew Senior Life Center in Boston. Rabbi, welcome. Welcome to the microphone here at Jewish Sacred Aging. Nice to have you.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Sarah, the purpose of this podcast is to really talk about this absolutely fantastic book that you and Rabbi Joel Baron are publishing called Deathbed Wisdom of the Hasidic Masters, The Book of Departure and Caring for People at the End of Life, which is a lot to say. It's a lot to get on the t-shirt, but congratulations. First of all, let's do the technical stuff real fast. This book is being published by Jewish Lights, and when do you anticipate it coming out?
Beginning of May.
So May 2016, and it'll be available, obviously, at bookstores and on the sacred Amazon, I would imagine.
Yes. You can pre-order it already now.
Oh, good. Okay, so really, this is a very, very exciting book. Let's start with the reason why. What drew you to this fascinating topic and this inclusion of Hasidic masters on end-of-life discussions?
So Rabbi Joel Baron and I were simply working on, he brought this to me. He was in his final year of studies at Hebrew College Rabbinical School, and he had taken on this project. One of his rabbis there knew that he was working with me in hospice care and in end-of-life pastoral care, and told him about the text, and he began translating and then came to me as a mentor and colleague to really understand these stories better, what the rabbis meant, and then how we could understand them in the context of our care today. So it's an amazing collection. It's the deaths of the great rabbis, and it's a unique resource. It was put together initially in Hebrew by Binyamin Mintz in 1830. And we had this opportunity to translate and learn from and see through this window into a very different world and perspective on the end of life to really guide us also in expanding our own ideas about how we approach death and dying spiritually and in community and how we try and live well and according to our values and live fully up until the very end. It felt really important right now when baby boomers are accompanying their parents at this at the end of life, and also beginning to look over the horizon at our own aging and ultimate death. So that's how we dove in. We work in hospice, and these stories just began to enrich our own worldviews.
I'm holding a pre-publication copy of it here with me, and for those people who are listening, there are the first part of this book, just the names of rabbis from the Hasidic tradition, and a story or a midrash about, in essence, could you say it's almost like their own ethical will? Would that be a misstatement?
Well, they're very diverse, and that's what's part of what's intriguing, is their students told these stories, and it's, you know, I would say in Jewish tradition, we often look to the Torah, we look to sources to have role models, and so when we're talking about, like, hospitality, we'll reference Avraham and inviting guests into his tent, and when we're, the Torah only goes so far in terms of what we learn about how people approach death. And these stories enrich that whole area, giving us multitude of examples of how we can begin to think about what it means to reach the next stage of life, perhaps, for some of them, or to, many Jews don't have words for what happens when we die. And there could be a deep sense of something greater or of peace, but we don't have so much language to expand upon that. And these give us a vocabulary. They give us mythic role models to walk with in some ways. So some of it is about ethical wills, about what you pass on, but some of it is also about what it means when you send the doctor away. You know, it gets into the details of real life.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because you mentioned the sending of the doctor away. So there's this, one of the stories, Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Kutz, mm-hmm. who many of our colleagues, you know, reference him a lot of times, But there's this wonderful story about him sending the doctor away and him basically, you know, refusing to do anything and waiting death. It's almost as a proof text, you know, if he was teaching this, as a glimpse into refusing medical treatment in the 21st century, of saying, you know, there's a time, I'm done.
Yeah.
And let that flame of life flicker out in dignity and in sanctity, but to do more, to keep doing. No, thank you. Could you just reflect upon, I mean, that story? It's a beautiful story. It's very short, but it's a beautiful story about Menachem Mendel. And for people who are listening to this, there's the story. There's this story, and then there's almost like commentaries on an appropriate phrase. When you sort of like read a Torah commentary or the Rashi to the commentary on a text, and it really speaking, you know, as somebody who was also a teaching for those of our colleagues who wanted to use this, it's a brilliant way to teach this because you could give one of these stories to a class, have them read it, and then there's built-in commentaries that could spark conversation. Like the phrase that Sarah just used, instructed them not to bring the doctor. You know, basically the commentary is Menachem Mendel of Kotz is asserting himself at the time of death and taking control of the situation, which could very easily spark a conversation in our day and age of the tension between autonomy and allowing supposedly God to take care of things. And what does it mean to take control of the situation at one's end of one's life? And here you could build an argument. Here's a proof text from a Hasidic master, which says, hey, it's perfectly legitimate to take control.
Right, right. And that for the people caring for him or caring for a person today who says, I'm done, for them to be able to have a role model and not feel, you know, not feel guilt or question that autonomous decision by the person who is themselves done. You know, they've lived a full life. They feel good about what they've accomplished. And the diagnosis today, we can say, is clear, right? It's a very different story if someone is not, let's say, already on hospice or not where there's a possibility for cure. He became ill with, the text says, he became ill with the sickness that killed him. So that's a pretty clear statement that this was a terminal diagnosis. And in this story, not only does he not want a doctor, he also wants some time to be alone. And that can be very challenging for families too, because we do have the dominant story is one of gathering everyone you love around you. And that can work really well for many people, but there are also people who really want some quiet time and really need to just drift into their own thoughts. And here we have a model who can help us talk about that, help us accept these different ways that people approach the end.
I mean, your experience at the Hebrew Senior Life in Boston, I'm sure you've run across, as many of our colleagues have had with dealing with congregants, at the end of life, where there is this sense of isolation is the wrong word. It's the shutting. In essence, the system is naturally shutting down, and they eat less. The respiration quiets, and that's not the time to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. So I'm sure you've seen this in your own clinical work.
Yes, for sure. And there's some beautiful models here, and where like a person saying, I just want some quiet time, there's one Rabbi Neftali who suddenly stopped speaking. And the text, Neftali of Ropshitz, it says, this caused great anguish to the members of his household and with those close to him because they didn't know what had happened to him. And when he needed something specific, they weren't able to serve him for they didn't know what he wanted because he said nothing. You know, that's just a beautiful rendering of something people often face when a person can no longer communicate. And so these stories bring us right, allow us to teach, prepare for the many different ways this will unfold, both for ourselves and for those we love. And to be able to think about them in advance, really, or outside of that moment in time, is a whole new opportunity for people to be. I mean, we have things like the Conversation Project, all of these different Being Mortal by Atul Gawande, trying to speak about how do we open up these topics more? How do we begin to not just push this away until we're forced to deal with it, but to begin to have the ability, the trust that we can talk about these things and superstition is not going to then bring them upon us, right? That we can actually talk about challenging, very sad things and possibly learn to find meaning and comfort in the face of those things.
These stories give us an interesting insight, actually pull back the curtain a little bit to the culture of several centuries ago of these Hasidic masters. And in reading through them, I'm wondering, as you studied them, Sarah, and as you wrote about them with our colleague, Rabbi Baron, what gift did these people give you?
It really was a gift. The sort of feeling that is, or the fear people have of dying alone, I feel like was really countered by these stories. Because death in these stories becomes, not only is it in community of a live community, it's in the community of the people who came before, the people who will come after. It's a death becomes something that is in line with a person's life, and where a death can fulfill someone's greatest beliefs. We have the rabbi of Bershad, who rather than having lived a life that was really based on telling the truth and upholding honesty, at a point when he is in a situation where he is being forced to lie, he says, "Let me die now," to God, and he passes away. And just that sense of being able to have death be so much a part, a fulfillment of the values of your life, is very inspiring. And that came through again and again in these stories.
I want to talk to I'm fascinated, as fascinating as the stories are, and they're riveting in many ways and very relatable to, as we mentioned before, to current situations. I was equally fascinated, and I think really, to be honest, I think one of the real enduring qualities of what this project is, and I really congratulate you on a brilliant project.
Thank you.
Is at the back end of the book. You write in this section that called conclusion that in the course of studying these stories, you encounter five themes: love, reconciliation, forgiveness, hope, gratitude, and the sense that we come across a lot now, legacy. Talk to us a little bit about how those themes emerged and what they really say to us in this world, in our time.
So a background for those themes is those are also part of a spiritual assessment tool that we've developed in our chaplaincy department here. Themes we look for when we're engaged in pastoral care with elders. The way they came out in these stories was beautiful to us in many ways. We regularly encounter elders, many of whom are facing diminishment, you know, have lost people they love, are facing the diminishment of their own autonomy and strength, and how to have hope in the face of that. And again in these stories, we see rabbis who are often facing that similar thing. They wrestle with their diminishing authority, they lose their strength, and you see them engaging with their disciples. You see them creating a sense even of how they will continue to be present after their deaths. For example, there's a story where Rabbi Holt says, you know, I'm not going to allow God to just send me to the next world. I'm going to argue for redemption in this world. I'm going to argue before I'm allowed to go to Olam Haba. I'm going to ensure that there can be more redemption in this world. Now we have all, I don't know how many people believe that all the different things that happen after one dies in such a concrete way. But in terms of that rabbi establishing his complete commitment to the world and the people living in it, and that he will be standing by them, is just an incredibly hopeful image. And so these values, this idea of having hope, even in the face of what can feel like a very bleak end, the world is expanded by these stories, and in ways that can translate back into our own lives. You mentioned the word legacy. Really understanding what it means to live your values up till the end allows people to then pass those values on in a different way. So often when that does not happen, when there's trauma towards the end in different ways in a family, and disagreement of opinions and challenging decisions to make, and potential guilt over a decision that was made, you see families torn apart. And hopefully that the person's life ultimately is remembered and the things they passed on. But when we can, when a person themselves can model a death where they bring their families together around decisions, where there's a clarity put forth, and where there's a hopefulness, the gift that is to one's children and grandchildren is just enormous.
And that really is the good death, as opposed to, you know, perhaps drugs. It's or palliative. I think in our spiritual contention or a religious environment, that good death is exactly what you just described. Having a sense of peace, having a sense of shleimut, having a sense of family and love, and holding that person. And many of our colleagues, myself and yourself and your work, have been present when that has happened. And the residual of that on a family is overwhelming. It is very spiritual. Included in this book, and again, the end of the book is equally as brilliant. You have this characteristics of active dying, you know, really walking people through various stages, and you have this section called Sparks, which I really would like to ask you about, because you talk about instances, stories, little reflections on aspects that we talk about all the time. For example, you have one of the sections here on body and soul. This idea of taken from the stories, the Jewish holistic approach to life, the mind, the body, the soul, all interconnected. Could you just, how did these sections, their little vignettes, one page, for example, body and soul, ritual, have something I think called the end of desire, which I want to ask you about too.
Yes.
How did this section come about? What was the genesis?
So as we were making our way through these stories, and we went through and read each one and made interpretations and footnotes, and we did that three times, going back and digging deeper, and in between those times teaching them and getting insights from students. As we went through, there were moments when something came up and we just felt like we need to write more about this. And so we created these short essays to take ideas that we saw coming up repeatedly to fill them out more and explain them more. And so, for example, the one on body and soul, there was so much reference to the physical self, right? We have Rabbi Nachman, you know, it describes him vomiting blood before his death. Like, there's a real encounter with the physicality of death, which is also so important. But then what really comes forth in that story, it ends with him saying, I'm not leaving you, right? His soul is remaining with his followers and with those who loved him. There's such a balancing act between the two that it just felt like an opportunity to try and enrich people's understanding of those two aspects of our lives.
And I'm very happy that you included a couple of little essays dealing with mental health aspect. You have something on coping with dementia, and you also have something dealing with the title that you have in my copy is Depression and Sadness. I think it's very, very important that you included that those issues dealing with mental health issues.
It's so important, and it's something that is so greatly misunderstood. And especially as one, you know, is faced with terminal illness, it can be so challenging to a family. I mean, the hospice direction of really looking at how we can live as fully as possible and get as much out of life as we can, and given the time we have, is such an important one. And then a family can be totally geared towards that, but then what if the patient themselves is depressed, right? And how do you, the family can want everything they want for that person, but they're not suddenly, especially someone who has wrestled with dementia, depression their whole life, it's not suddenly going to flip and they can be have a happy death no matter what the family wants. So how do you truly accompany someone through this period based on where they are versus what you want for them?
There's an absolutely lovely vignette here from Nachman of Bratslav. The introduction to your little commentary reads, on Friday, on the eve of Shabbat, before his departure, he was very weak and he was vomiting such blood and had almost expired, and his students stood before him. His principal disciple, Rabbi Nathan, pleaded, Rabbi, please save yourself. And he answered, I have no desire.
Yeah.
That's a very, very powerful, I have no desire. Could you just, before we have to conclude, walk me through how that phrase is interpreted by you and our colleague, Rabbi Baron, and how you explain that.
Right. So we explain that by saying what we can do as a loving community in that moment is not try and convince that person that they need to love life, that they necessarily have to be there, let's say, for their grandchild's bar mitzvah. Rather, to truly love that person is to stand with them where they are, to be there on the brink with them, whatever that means. And that presence that we can have in that togetherness, we counter this fearful idea of one dying alone. But to do that, we have to be able to stand with them. And the moment that we try and change them at that time, we are leaving them alone. And so our power, the power of Bikur Cholim, the power of spiritual care, is to really join them in that moment and be able to have the courage to stand there with them.
The power of presence, Sarah, that comes through the entire book. And once again, the book is entitled Deathbed Wisdom of the Hasidic Masters, The Book of Departure, The Book of Departure and Caring for People at the End of Life. Rabbi Sarah Pasha Orlo, who has been our guest here on this edition of the Jewish Sacred Aging podcast, co-authored with Rabbi Joel Baron. And if I remember correctly, it's due out May of 2016, and it's published by Jewish Lights. And I think, Sarah, you mentioned that you can pre-order it now, either through Jewish Lights, I guess, and also on Amazon. It's you pre-order it that way, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with you today.
Sarah, this has been one of very, very much good luck with this book. I think you're going to be making a major contribution to the literature in this growing field. And I think, putting on my rabbi hat, that as people teach this to our people, you will really encounter some great comfort and help people and families during the end of this journey, a person's life journey. For that, you should be congratulated and through this mitzvah. So thank you very much, Rabbi Sarah Pasha Orlo, the co-author of Deathbed Wisdom of the Hasidic Masters, The Book of Departure, and Caring for People at the End of Life. Rabbi Sarah Pasha Orlo, our guest today, Director of Spiritual Care at the Hebrew Senior Life Center in Boston. We thank you for joining us on this podcast at Jewish Sacred Aging. You can follow more along the lines of what we're doing and check us out at our website, www.jewishsacredaging.com. This is Richard Address. We thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you on the next podcast on Jewish Sacred Aging. Take care. Thank you. Shalom.